And I hear that music, which means it's another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, and we have The Natural Nurse joining me for a great program today. Hey, Ellen, how are you?
Hi, Eugene. It's wonderful to be together, virtually at least. And we're going to be talking here today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, as we always do. And we are so happy to reach out to our hundreds of thousands of listeners. And we want to let all you know that we love to hear from you. You can get in touch by sending an email at naturalnurse.com or drznaturally.com. And we're going to be talking about some topics today related, especially for Black History Month, in terms of our interactions of herbs in the Jamaican rainforest and bush medicine, and also a warrior named Nanny of the Maroons. But first, I'd like to share with our listeners the many classes and workshops that we have available, because people call me all the time saying, how can I become an herbalist? How can I do natural as my profession? So that's something I really love to share. If you go to naturalnurse.com and look at classes, those are the up and coming events. We just had listed for February a trip we do every year called Echo Tours for Cures, the education vacation in Jamaica, West Indies. And although we had a little hiatus right now because of, we all know what, the pandemic, we'll certainly be back with that. And of course, today we're going to be talking about some of the fabulous things that you could learn by going on a trip with us. And today we'll be doing a virtual trip to Jamaica. But coming up this month, we also have herbal manufacturing legal considerations. That is a very important class, Dr. Z, because some people, like even yourself, you're a kitchen herbalist as well as being a brilliant physician, and you'll make salves and herbal remedies, which you are allowed as a doctor, as a naturopathic doctor licensed, to make a salve or a remedy and just hand it to your patient. But even you could not go, wow, it worked great, let me make lots of them and sell them online. You would be out of compliance doing that. And so people need to know that, because the FDA goes after them. So if you're thinking of selling any kind of herbal product, I suggest you join us on February 27th. If you sign up for it and you're not available at the time of the class, you still get the class, because everything is archived, as well as all the handouts, which are very important in terms of knowing how to do herbal correctly and legally, so you don't get into hot water with the FDA. Also, if any of you are either massage therapists, nurses, dietitians, RDs, or midwives, you do get 3 CEUs for taking this class, although it's open to anyone. You don't have to be a professional of any kind. Then coming up really soon in March is the once a year class that we teach called the Natural Nurse Herbal Certification Course. And that is an online course. It has 18 CEUs. It's very, very reasonable, and it lasts 4 months and gives you a chance to really delve in to all the basics of herbal medicine. Like, what's the difference between, Dr. Z, you're not allowed to answer, but you listeners out there, what's the difference between a tea and a tisane and an infusion and a decoction and a capsule and an extract and a tincture? How would each of those be made? How do you read a label so you know the milligram amounts in each of them? And as part of this 4-month class, you do have lots of homework to do, which you send back, and it is one-on-one reviewed with you, as well as making an actual herbal project. So this now, is an excellent place to start.
Can I ask you a question?
Start. Yes,
who,
sir.
Who's the professors in this thing?
That is me.
And do you have an opening? I want to put an application in.
To be a professor in this class.
Yeah, now that I'm not teaching as much anymore down the road. So anyway, we need to talk about that.
Yeah, so we do this class. I've been doing this class every year for 10 years. Yeah. And this is a once a year thing that we offer. We do offer it during the year besides this. But if you take it as a class all by yourself, it doesn't have this fabulous, really low group rate that we can afford to offer when, you know, 35, 40 people are all taking it. So that's coming right up. That's starting in March. Just go to naturalnurse.com classes and events, scroll down, and you'll see how you can just click and sign up for it. So we have all kinds of lots of great classes. Also, Dr. Z, today I was contacted by our wonderful farm, Restoration Farm, just before we started our show, because she's reaching out to put together our on-ground classes for June and July. So you and I definitely, hopefully today, can have a meeting, and actually we put that in our calendars now and start telling people. People sometimes drive in from it, from all kinds of states. People have even flown in for it, where we actually spend a day in the field collecting wild, edible, and medicinal plants and making them into remedies. So people actually go home with their own homemade remedy. That's always one of my favorite classes.
Yes, and I just wanted to let you know that in honor of my service teaching for so many years and helping be the founder of the naturopathic school in Bridgeport, which, you know, is closing, unfortunately, in May, my students pooled together money, and they're giving me a trip to Jamaica, and I'm leaving in 2 weeks. This is a big surprise. They just gave it to me, so I'm so excited. It's interesting, we're talking about that today, so I'm kind of scurrying around doing some ordering of supplies to bring down to Jamaica so we can do some of those fun shops in medicine making. So this is a big surprise. I was not expecting to go, but my students were very generous and felt I needed some type of
send off,
you know, for the end of this, you know, era, big era. So yeah, that's exciting news.
Absolutely. And so another exciting news for our listeners is the fact that this is going to make you much more available to do one-on-one consultations, especially with telemedicine now being so easily available.
Absolutely. You know, there's it's very good to reach out and of course speak to, you know, someone with over 30 years of expertise in holistic medicine and naturopathic care. So definitely, if you have a friend or a loved one or yourself that needs some type of consultation, yeah, reach out and contact us.
And we'll make appointments for after the Jamaica trip, no doubt, because you'll be very, very busy until then. So In the vein of Jamaica, in the name of herbs, in the name of outside gathering of wild and medicinal plants, let's delve into our topic for today. In honor of Black History Month, one of somebody I have really always looked up to and have been so wonderfully blessed to be able to get some of her information directly from her relatives, who we know so well, thanks to you, Dr. Z. And our focused person for the day is Nanny of the Maroons, who is an herbalist, a warrior, and a freedom fighter. And how about, Dr. Z, that Nanny, her beautiful face, is on the 500 banknote of Jamaica, when we here in the US have still as yet to have a woman, let alone a Black woman, be the face of a dollar bill or a bill.
That's really well spoken, Dr. Kamai. Absolutely, Jamaica, she is honored as one of the, what I call the heroes of Jamaica. And she was an iconic figure in Jamaican history, celebrated in poems and portraits, and like you said, even the currency. Now, we know a lot about Nanny through historical documents and memory and folklore, which provide information about this woman's life. we don't know her birthplace, although it is certain that she and other enslaved people sought refuge from brutal slave society in the mountains of Jamaica, where together they established a Maroon community. And Maroon means, it's a Spanish word, which means untamed freedom people, you know, free people. So, because, you know, Jamaica has a long history of being colonized, first by the Spaniards and then, of course, the Brits. And then in 1720, Nanny became the leader of a Maroon settlement, which is called Nanny Town, which we had the opportunity to visit.
We went there.
Yeah. Which is located in the Blue Mountains of Jamaica, the highest peaks. And they're pretty high considering that Jamaica is a small island, and you go from the seashore, and then less than 30 miles, you're up 7,500 feet or something close to that. It's really pretty steep.
Well, I was always impressed with stories about Nanny, and I'm not sure these were confirmed, but, you know, I've been reading about her so many years, that she was already a master herbalist, and put on a chef, and that this is a story, I can't corroborate this, that she actually, when she knew she was being taken, gathered medicinal plant seeds and either taped them or somehow hid them in her clothes. So those very plants wound up. Now, when a slave ship docks, and apparently she and many of the others actually planned ahead of time to run for the hills, you didn't know where it was going to dock. What if it docked in Antarctica? But this ship happened to dock on Jamaican shores when they ran up. Many people were shot in the back, of course, but some escaped. And the seeds that she brought were compatible with the environment there. So if she planted them, they could grow.
Wow, that's great. That's really interesting. Some of these plants we'll talk about.
She was known as a spiritual leader, and also, like what you talked about, the maroon science is a word really connoting her ability to control both natural and, of course, a strong belief in supernatural forces.
Yeah, and it's believed that she used that to help her group of maroons fight the British and overcome the British.
Let's think about this. If the British are going to, you know, no offense to my many British friends, but their style of warfare would be, especially in those days, in the middle of the jungle, wear thick red coats made out of what? I don't know, wool, I guess, pretty hot. Big boots and their things, and they march in a big line. Imagine this in the jungle. And then the maroon warriors are scattered about up in the trees behind the rocks with dart guns from poison frogs they found there. And all these, you know, things, they didn't have all these big rifles, but nor were they sitting ducks like these big giant red guys, all sweaty and hot and not comfortable with all this heavy gear, marching through the forest.
Absolutely. You know, and then she was, she used guerrilla warfare. So on one of our eco-tours trips, I wanted to tell the listeners about this. On one of our eco-tours trips, a well-known ethnomusicologist and ethno-historian, Kenneth Bilby, Dr. Ken Bilby, big up, and he actually has his stuff at the Smithsonian. He's so well-known. His recordings of the Maroons and the Coromanti drumming. But Dr. Bilby wrote a whole history of the Maroons, and there's a picture of one of the Maroons that was just standing there, and then a Maroon in camouflage. And Dr. Kamai, I tell you could not see one bit of person the way that they used the camouflage. And that was one reason why they were so, they would disappear into the forest, and the British would be like, how did these people come and slit our throats and kill us, you know? So it was really tough on the British. They had their hands full as the Nanny became skilled in guerrilla warfare. And actually, that warfare was actually studied at West Point. They were so impressed by her ability to fight guerrilla warfare, which was kind of new back then, like you said, that they still study her moves. It's interesting. And she trained her Maroon warriors in the art of guerrilla warfare. And like you said, she was a great magician woman or worked science to protect the warriors from the British enemies. So yeah, and they fought between 1728 and 1734. That's a long war, you know? And then the British commanders, this guy named Stoddard, eventually destroyed Nanny Town and claimed to kill all the Maroons, but he did not. Nanny just went up into the highlands near what's known as the Rio Grande in Jamaica, a beautiful river up in the mountains there. And she had other contemporaries, Cudjo Akampong, who ran the Maroons in the middle of the island in what's called the cockpit country, Puffy and Kwaku. These were all Maroon warriors that were trained or at least worked with Nanny to, again, fight the British. Now, they ended up settling a treaty which gave, they were the first free Black people in the Western Hemisphere. Actually, they gave them their own country, in a way, in Jamaica, in the middle of Jamaica, the Maroon Federation. And still today, the Maroons remain fiercely independent from Jamaica. So
there's a lot about that I'd like to comment on. Thank you for that in-depth history. And of course, there's a lot we know and also a lot we don't know, because she was a hidden figure in a lot of ways. However, she is a warrior and a freedom fighter and recognized among her people, even being a woman. So I'm wondering if that was true, you know, with various tribal groups at that time, that they would accept a woman as a warrior princess leader.
Yeah, clearly. Maybe where she came from in West Africa was known for that. I'm not really sure.
Right. We don't know that. But then let's talk about our own Jamba of the Maroons, because in our book, The Natural Medicine Chest, Dr. Z, and in other slide presentations that we offer, we have a picture of Nanny along with a picture of Jamba. And Jamba, of course, was through your connection when you were a young man, became your teacher. And then through you, I met Jamba. So he became both of our teachers and really was very forward with the fact that he was okay and felt that he was spiritually guided to share with you and I, even though we are not, you know, Black African people, the knowledge of the Maroons, because he was a direct descendant of Nanny of the Maroons. And he told me one night around the campfire that he was instructed by his grandma Duppy, which they use that word Duppy to refer to a ghost, who communicated to him that he was supposed to share his knowledge with us.
Yeah, that's just a beautiful story because, you know, the Maroon people, they have a lot of secrets still that they, you know, and a lot of distrust, and rightfully so, with outsiders. But clearly he was moved, and, you know, from even being touched by his grandmother to share a lot of the Maroon medicine with me and you and so many other naturopaths and herbalists and photographers.
And we asked his permission before we wrote it in our book.
Oh, yeah.
Natural Medicine Chest. And he said, yes, he wants it to be shared. So, you know, that's a big honor because, you know, in a newer system that I think is linked somehow to a movement called woke, you know, I've been told that we shouldn't be sharing the Maroon knowledge, but we are sharing it directly on behalf of Jamba with his permission and blessing and request.
Yes, absolutely.
So I have no problem with that. You know, I really think it is mandated by him.
Yeah, and he also said, you know, he'd like us to kind of give back to the community and also to you know, allow you know, this information to be, you know, shared. And, you know, he checked everything out before we published it. And so this is all part of of our book, which is called Herbs from the Shaman's Garden. And
well, you know, that's a chapter in our book, The Natural Medicine Chest. Yes.
Yeah.
And that's so something people can look for.
Yeah. It chronicles some of the herbs that we worked with, you know, with him. So of course we, you know,
we also have a great article, because we have a great article that's really easily accessible online, Dr. Z, called Jamba of the Maroons. If anybody just Googles that, they come to our article, which is posted in the American Herbalist, the American Botanical Council. ABC Council, American Botanical Council, in their magazine. We wrote when Jamba passed to the other side, you know, with a lot of honor, we wrote an article, which is posted online, a lot about his history. And, you know, this was a memorial article to the many teachings that he shared, not only with us, but hundreds of people in the locality that he lived. So, you know, there is quite a long history there, and quite an honor to have known so much about Nanny of the Maroons. And another person I'll just bring up, Black History Month, is Dr. Anthony Kweku Ondo, who is another fabulous teacher of ours, a really master herbalist from Ghana.
Yes, and we talk about Dr. Kweku in our book, again, The Natural Medicine Chest, particularly his book, which was called The Cat's Claw and the Parrot's Beak. And he looked at this interesting plant, which we call, you know, cat's claw. And of course, it's gained a reputation for treating Lyme disease and other things. But what he was so interested in is the stories and the folklore and the history and even the archaeological evidence of people from South America and people from Africa having almost similar stories, similar uses of the herb. Even the herbs look so similar, different species of Uncaria, Tomentosa, and forget the one in Africa. But yeah, it's so interesting how people communicated these things. I'm sure that they've, you know, voyaged back and forth, even before, even though they always say that, you know, Christopher Columbus was the first one to do these things, and a lot of the white Europeans, but they're the ones that wrote the, you know, history books. I say his story, H-I-S, his story, because of course Women's History Month is next month. But a lot of it was, of course, you know, changed the history. But a lot
it's
of
true. Now, in terms of Dr. Anthony Kweku Ondo, a shame is that he passed away before, like, internet presence was big, but he had a phenomenal book called The Science and Romance of Selected Herbs Used in Medicine and Religious Ceremony. And luckily, there's a young man, and his name is Essex Ingham. One day we had a discussion with him, Dr. Z, who was actually a relative. I believe he might have been his son-in-law, but he dedicated himself to bringing back that book. So he's been working on that project, The Science and Romance of Selected Herbs, because he inherited and got a hold of, you know, some of the original writings. So thank God there are younger people such as Essex, who I believe is destined to be a major herbalist in his own right. He has been working with me. In fact, he took that class last year, the Natural Nurse Herbal Certification course. I was fortunate enough to have him as a student, although I learned so much from him. I'm sitting here right now with this beautiful coconut mango body butter he made as his project. And he's bringing back a lot of Dr. Anthony Kweku's work so that the world will have it once again.
Yeah, I'll read an excerpt from our book. It says, "A Parallel People, a Plant Panacea in Africa, according to leading ethnobotanist Anthony Kweku Ondo, PhD and fellow of the Linnaean Society." I mean, that's a huge honor, by the way. "A parallel species, Uncaria africana, the parrot's beak, is used by the Ashanti people for similar medicinal purposes. In his fascinating book, The Parrot's Beak and Cat Paw, Hope for True Healing from the Rainforests of Africa and South America, Dr. Ondo points out the similarity and what he believed the common origin of the Ashanti Indians of South Africa and the Askenika Indians of South Africa South America and the Ashanti people of Western Africa. These cultures are somehow linked by a common ancestral people called the Olmecs, a pre-Mayan civilization. He provided anthropological links between Africa and South America, et cetera, et cetera. So good, really good book, really interesting reading, you know.
And it's so important to bring that knowledge back, because it seems like anything that happened before the computer age, you know, like disappears somewhere in history.
Yeah, I regret. I looked very hard. I'm going to keep looking, but I could not find the interview we did with him, but there's still some.
Oh, it must be. I know where it is. Yeah, we interviewed Dr. Ando while he was on this side. And you know what, Dr. Z? Yeah. I am going to support you someday to get into your garage, because it's got to be on a reel to reel. Because remember, we did this very radio show and the one that we had on other stations like WUSB, we did all our taping on reel to reel tape. So you know what, guys? We're old too.
Yeah.
We did. And then cut and paste. Dr. Z was the master of cut and paste. That meant taking two reel to reels, rolling them along. And if we had made a mistake or we didn't want something, he actually took a razor blade and sliced out that part and then put the two pieces of the tape, I don't know with what, some special other thing, back together.
Yeah. Yeah. Those were the days.
That's hours and hours and hours of work for each show.
Yes. Yes. Or a lot of shows,
So somewhere there, Dr. Anthony Kweku Ando, I bet we have that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I will look through some of those things too.
So you can put it on your project after you have more time, if that ever happens. So still, you know, these are people, both Nanny of the Maroon, Jamba of the Maroon, Dr. Anthony Kweku Ando, who we're honoring for their medicine work, for their excellence in beingness, so representative of many, many people of all races. And they are really special beings, and I'd love to have their teachings further promoted to the modern people coming up now.
Yeah, so we should probably take a quick break soon, and then we can talk about some of these herbs that Jamba, you know, passed on some of the uses, like Jamaican dogwood and pimento and leaf of life and wonder mango. I mean, we think mango is just something to eat the fruit, but they actually use the leaves as a powerful medicine. So
we'll talk about that in a minute. Yeah. And so I just want you to know that you are listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z on Progressive Radio Network. You can find out more at naturalnurse.com. We'd love to hear from you, or drznaturally.com. And right now we're going to take a break right here on Progressive Radio Network. We'll be right back with more on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. I know. That was yours, I'm sure.
Yeah, I know. It was a little corny, but I thought it would be fun, though.
It was.
And, you know, speaking of time, I want to tell you a very interesting story, what happened in Jamaica using a particular type of time, which isn't really the thymus species. It's another species more related to the coleus, but they call it, the Jamaicans call it French thyme. Some people call it Cuban thyme. I'm sure it grows all over Florida down there. But one of our students got sliced with a machete accidentally. You know, stuff happens when you're down there. And, you know, he was playing around with this machete, thinking he knew what he was doing. Interestingly enough, he was trained in the army. So anyway, but he sliced himself. So some of the bush doctors, first of all, they took the thyme and they squeezed it and they irrigated the wound, and just, I'm sure it killed all the microbes in there. Then they took special herb, which is called basita, which is known as the bastard cedar. And basically they sliced the bark, and out came out this latex, which they then took up with a sterile knife, put it on this guy's wound, and pinched it and held it together. The basita hardened into a super glue, and the thyme that we used, this, you know, French thyme, killed all the things. Do you know that that wound healed so precisely? It was as almost if he got stitched by the best surgeon. A good example of bush medicine. It's so interesting.
So I wonder if that's the same latex. I just bought a latex mattress. And it says it's organic, and it was made, you know, by latex oozing from, I think it was a particular palm tree, maybe not that exactly, that exact.
So this is a cedar tree. It's not really related to our cedar, but it's called the Basida, is what Jamba used to call it, Basida. And so, you know, it's interesting that even modern surgeons use crazy glue to glue together wounds sometimes. You know, they use this acrocyanic acid, which glues the wound together. But this is an ancient practice to kind of, I've seen actually pictures of Africa of people using the head of ants to kind of staple together a bad wound in the era before stitching. So I just thought it was great. So did the students, of course. Because this guy healed up amazingly. His name's Ryan, right? He ended up going back to Jamaica many, many times on our trips became so enthralled because it worked on him, you know? It's like...
Well, when we talk about that, how you got involved in all this is because it worked on you.
That's right. When something works on you, it opens your eyes. That's what I always say, you know? So I had a case of dysentery. And this was before Imodium was a prescription.
And how old were you at that time, Dr. Z? Let's share with the audience.
Oh, I think I was like 22 or something like that. You know, I was doing some marine biology work down there for a graduate level course at Stony Brook, like an advanced course at Stony Brook University. And I was down there doing some research and I got sick and I was like, oh man, this is like, you know, ruining my trip, having a case of some type of intestinal dysentery. So, you know, I was like, oh, geez, should I go to the doctor? Should I go home? Should I just, you know, leave, whatever? And I happened to mention it to Jamba and his teacher, Hoppetop, and who, you know, unfortunately, these gentlemen have long passed over. But, you know, so Pop said that he thinks he could come up with a remedy for me, you know, using some of the ancient maroon medicines. So he took me out into the bush and showed me exactly what he was going to pick. And, you know, he collected it in a very ceremonious way. Like he sliced the bark, upward for the anti-diarrheal effect or astringent effect. And he used sea grape. And then he said, well, we need to use a particular type of fern because it kills parasites. And you may have picked up a parasite or something like that in the water. And I'm like, okay. So I was just, I didn't know anything back then, Dr. Kamai. I was just a willing and, you know, partner and willing, partner in this, helping him gather things, hooked up the herbs. And lo and behold, after drinking this tea, I started to feel much, much better in my stomach and was able to stay in Jamaica and continue my work there. But what it really taught me was that maybe I should start studying these herbs. I was so fascinated that I left marine science. And every time I could get, I remember at Stony Brook University, I'd take a break from studying and I'd go to the chemistry library where I found all these journals of medicinal plant medicine, the Journal of Ethnopharmacology, Lloydia, Plantomedica. And I was just like, wow, you mean there's all this science written about all these different herbs, you know? Because of course I was training to go to medical school or do something like that, biology or actually marine science at the time. So yet I'm like, yeah, this guy never went to finish high school and he knew more about the herbs than any doctor I've ever seen, you know, any regular medical doctor. They don't know what they're doing with these herbs. So it was like a epiphany in my brain that maybe I should pursue this field. And that's when I kind of then serendipitously found out about naturopathic medicine. So it's an interesting story how we end up doing our life's work, our dharma, you know?
It is. In your case, it's fascinating. And then you reintegrated back as a naturopathic physician, which brings together both the art and honoring the essence and the spirituality and the collection mechanisms of the plants with the science that is really well documented in regular mainstream literature.
Absolutely. I mean, every time I go down there, and I've been to Jamaica many, many times over the last 3-4 decades, you know, I always learn something and then able to apply it to clinical practice. Many times these tropical herbs are more studied, less studied by the West Indians, and you find more journal articles in India and China and other, you know, island and other tropical areas. So a lot of these herbs are what I call pan-tropical, which means they grow across all the warm areas of the world. And although they're very varied, many times there's overlap. And this is where you can look at some of the scientific literature that's done on some of these plants and then look to see how much clinical research. And sometimes it's not a lot of clinical research. Sometimes it's just lab work or in vitro stuff, but quite a bit of in vivo, real clinical trials on medicinal plants. I don't know, you know, why it's not, it was never taught to conventional doctors. I mean, I know why. I'm just being.
Why is not scientific. Not about health and healing. Why we get into a political discussion is the why.
Yeah.
Because the pharmaceutical industry, it's much to their chagrin for people to learn about this, because then people can take care of themselves at a much safer way, a much lower cost, and with much less purchasing of pharmaceuticals. That's the why.
Yeah. Do you remember the story of the woman who ran out of her insulin and we gave her the
oh, let's therapy. Talk about that in terms yeah. of, well, let's focus, since we were going to focus on some very specific herbs that are tropical and, yeah. you know, would have been used like by Nanny. And one is, and we talk about it in our book, in the Natural Medicine Chest, particularly in the chapter called Herbs from the Shaman's Garden. And this herb has, you know, several interesting names as well, such as bitter melon. I would say that name has become more well recognized in, you know, let's say a health food store. But it's also called cerise.
Absolutely. And this is Momortica charantia. And it is, again, one of those interesting plants that grows along the tropics and very potent remedy for diabetes. And like you said, bitter melon. And the story goes is that, you know, this has been used by people in Jamaica, the Caribbean, Asia, India, as an ethnomedicine. And it's always interesting when we see that an herb is used pretty much the same way across many, many diverse cultures. So that tells us a lot about that there's something to this particular plant. And many times they use a strong infusion of the leaves for diabetes, dysentery, worms. Actually, it was part of the thing that the shaman gave me too for dysentery. But what's really interesting is Jamba used to say that cerise is used to clean the blood and the bowels. This benefits boils, acne, arthritis, psoriasis, and other skin ailments where toxic principles are manifesting. And scientific evidence does show that you can rid your body of endotoxins by using this herb. And in fact, children are given this herb twice a year for what they call a washout. So they give the cerise and then they give a couple teaspoons of castor oil and you get a washout. Why would you need a washout?
Well, you know, it's a strong laxative and a detoxificant for those. See, in every single society around the world, as well as in even Western civilizations, they all believed in the fact that accumulation of toxins leads to disease. And for some reason, that is completely ignored in Western medicine, even though once again, and we have actually promoted a lot of scientific literature showing how well detoxification works. For instance, in our book, Arthritis, the Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide, that inflammation is vastly influenced in a positive way when we do detoxification.
Absolutely, yeah. So it makes sense that they figured this out ethnobotanically. But the more fascinating modern day research on CeraCe was the discovery by Indian researchers of an active chemical fraction, which they actually called pea insulin. The reason why they called it pea insulin, pea is for plant, which means that it such resembles insulin that it's practically identical. And so, you know, the story goes is this one lady on our tour, I had left with a group of hikers to explore the rainforest, and Dr. Kamai remained at the base camp to give a workshop for other participants who maybe couldn't be as fit to get into the rainforest. And one of the Jamaican women, an insulin-dependent diabetic since childhood, became ill, and Dr. Kamai recognized the telltale signs of ketoacidosis in the woman. She began to be sweaty and nauseous, disoriented, weak, and the woman had been running low on her insulin supplies, which are hard to come in Jamaica. Sometimes they go get it from Kingston, and she lived out in the country. But Dr. Kamai, thinking quickly about what Jamba taught us, Dr. Kamai harvested the wild stand of the bitter melon, made a strong infusion, and administered it to the woman. Within an hour of taking the CeraCe, the woman was recovering from her near diabetic issues. The pea insulin and the CeraCe stabilized her blood sugar. And we, you know, in our book, we quoted the Journal of Natural Products that is true, but it was nice to see it work firsthand as a bush emergency.
It was amazing. It was really amazing. I mean, she could have been in real trouble. And remember, we're in the middle of nowhere. There's no hospitals. An ambulance, you know, would take 2 hours or practically wouldn't come there. There weren't really roads. And yeah. I was able to actually help her get out of a crisis. And then it was actually one more day, about 24 hours later, because this was a Sunday. On Monday, we were able to get actually her drug delivery. But it, you know, held her till then, which was just amazing. But people use bitter melon for lots of things. And oh boy, once you've tasted this, you understand the word bitter. I will say that.
Yeah, I have an interesting story. Just last week, I had a patient at University of Bridgeport, and we dropped his blood sugar from 400 down to almost normal, a little bit above normal, using the bitter melon for 3 weeks. Plus, you know, his diet, he was watching his diet better. So
yeah, I mean, that's huge. It's really, really helpful.
Powerful stuff.
And when you are able to moderate blood sugar, that also does things, even if it's not a life-saving thing, but something like healthy weight maintenance.
And anti-aging. I mean, right. It turns out that sugar acts as a free radical that then binds to proteins all throughout your body, and then nothing works. Enzymes don't work. The brain doesn't work because the brain uses a lot of sugar. I mean, it's a precursor to degenerative disease when sugar gets out of control in the body. They call it glycation. It's
And that's bitter melon is the easiest way to find it. But we're going to go to a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And when we come back, we will continue. And you can always find us at naturalnurse.com or drznaturally.com. And we love to hear from you. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
All right, that brings us back to the tail end of this program here. So, interesting story, Dr. Kamai, about the CeraCe. What a great plant that is, and to see it work right in front of our eyes. And that, of course,
it's very, very common, by the way, in Florida. They have it all over. Anybody who has a fence in their backyard, it usually grows there on its own.
Oh, yeah. And believe it or not, I end up growing it as an annual up here. Which
no, you don't. Nice. You're kidding me.
Oh, yeah. I put it out in a big pot. I have some great pictures.
We have got to do a show of the mostly tropical plants that you miraculously have growing. In fact, people can find it on YouTube. What could they type in to find your giant wild banana trees growing in Connecticut?
I guess you could look at Dr. Z's banana trees or Dr. Z's palm trees on YouTube, and you could see pictures of my trees, which have been actually, entered into the Connecticut Botanical Society's rare and notable trees because of what I've shown you can do.
And you're telling me you have Saracee growing in Connecticut?
Yeah, I bring it in for the winter, but yeah, I have a beautiful vine. That I use, and it's wonderful. Yeah.
Does it get the orange little melons?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I definitely have never seen that far north.
I'll send you a couple pictures.
Okay. You have to have a whole YouTube channel of all your amazing botanical accomplishments in terms of a gardener, in terms of a chef, where you use licorice root as a low glycemic sweetener, and all those things that are very special about what you have developed.
Thanks, Dr. Kamai. So let's cover one more herb. I think we have time for one more.
That's about what we have time for.
Because it's getting late in the broadcast there. But I like one of our traditions when we get to Jamaica after this long, not too long plane ride, but a long trip up to the mountains and feeling kind of tired, is we love to drink the Jamaican dogwood tea. And this is interesting. In our book, we call it the bark that takes the bite out of pain, a kind of a pun on the dogwood. But this was one of the most respected painkillers by medical doctors at the turn of the last century, when you would want to use opium but couldn't for the patient. And again, the Maroons became really knowledgeable about this plant for treating nerve pains, toothaches, the pain of broken bones, menstrual cramps, and so many other afflictions. What's interesting is it was actually used by the ancient Arawak Indians, who were the first original inhabitants of the Caribbean islands, as a fishing aid. They would beat the bark and roots into a mash, dam up the river, spread the dogwood in the water, and the fish would become lethargic and anesthetized, floating to the surface where they were easy to spear. So it has a compound that seems to be affect cold-blooded things like fish, insects, things like that, but not humans. In us, it won't stupefy us. It'll just take the bite out of pain, whether it's neurologic pain, toothaches, sciatica, migraines, and whether used topically as a poultice or internally as a tea or tincture or other applications, this is a very amazing thing. And I know when I tore my ACL about 10 years ago, I was in a lot of pain, so much that, couldn't sleep. And this was one of my main botanicals I could take to so I could get a decent night's sleep. So it really, really does help with pain like that. I know you've had some interesting stories about Jamaican dogwood over the years too.
Yeah, and in fact, when we've been in Jamaica on our Echo Tours for Cures, we've actually seen the natives right now using it similarly. Just throw the leaves in the water, and then the fish kind of get really slow and they just pick them up instead of having to fish them.
Yeah, exactly.
But then when we look at, this is what's so amazing to me about herbal medicine, Dr. Z, because we can talk about something like that. We can talk about using it as a magical spell, which might make someone sleepy. And then we can look at the very in-depth science, looking at the fact that we know that this effect works through the GABA-A receptors, and it modulates acetylcholine release. And the muscarinic receptor activation is augmented with calcium entry through L-type calcium channels and the calcium release from the intracellular stores. So when you're starting to talk that kind of language, which, you know, is beyond what some people understand, of course, it's a medical discussion, but here's why it should be used in mainstream medicine.
Absolutely. I mean, so many drugs are based on these neurotransmitters in our body, which are called GABA. You know, most of our relaxants, hypnotics, they call them, you know, things that help people sleep, help things that help people calm. Many of them are based on balancing GABA. So that is a target molecule for pharmacology. But, you know, the elder scholars, both, of course, in, you know, Chinese medicine and Ayurveda and Jamaican medicine.
Okay, and Western medicine. Look at John Uri Lloyd from the Lloyd Library.
That's true. That's true.
You and I went to. That is well documented, and that's in what would be considered mainstream medical at the turn of the century.
Absolutely. Yep. So we could see that medical doctors, even though back then they didn't really run any double-blind placebo-controlled trials on Pisidia, they wrote volumes and volumes of information in the eclectic Materia Medicas about how it worked clinically and how it made their patients feel. And I think that that's very valuable. We, you know, the double-blind placebo-controlled trial is just basically based on, you know, stuff for drug companies looking at pharmaceuticals. But it doesn't really work too well in an herbal and holistic model.
Right, because there's so many variables. It's very hard to have the one action when you have this plethora of naturally occurring compounds. But I just want to throw out for the Lloyd Library, for all our listeners who are interested, Dr. Z and I used to make pilgrimages there to look at these old eclectic medical journals, which has all these formularies and uses and scientific data from the 1900s. But guess what? You can now access that library. It's called the Lloyd Library. LLOYD online, and anyone can set up a free access and get all those journals. Remember, we used to have to sit in a little room and wait for them to bring it to us?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's so nice to be able to do that.
So, you know what? We are coming to the end of our show today, Dr. Z.
Okay. Well, we want to thank everyone for listening and, you know, honoring, of course, our wonderful show by tuning in and taking a lot of your time out to listen to our ramblings here. And hopefully you picked up something that you can use. And we look forward to you joining us again, as we always bring you exciting guests and topics on our program right here, The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Until next time, we hope that you
stay healthy, folks.
Stay healthy.
Bye.